Hello, friends, and welcome to the fourth episode of All New Snap Judgments. As always, I'm Roy Rogers, and joining me today for this episode is Aaron Glazer. How are you doing on this ridiculously hot time of the year in the continental United States, Aaron?
Summertime and the living's easy.
That's good for you, my friend. I've had a horrible head cold, and the weather here is unpalpable. And our air conditioner, our new building, sucks. So it's been kind of miserable for this beginning of the summer vacation, but it does beat having to go into the school building every day, I guess. Although I could do without this cold. But what's not cold is our guest for this week. Aaron, who is joining us for this episode?
We have the legendary voice of Marvel Snap Zone, the man who is staying up all night, every night, bringing you the best content in the game. We have Den. Hey, Den.
Thanks a lot. That was probably the best intro of me ever.
Oh, it gets better. Wait till the end of the episode.
Ooh. So, Den, for our loyal listeners here who may have only read your articles on SnapZone or might be finding you through our podcast stream and not necessarily following your work at Marvel SnapZone, where could they follow up and find your content?
Well, actually, if you speak English, Marvel SnapZone is about the only place where you can find my content. If you're French, I do have a YouTube channel and I appear on several French streams regularly. So It's called La Game du Matin. In English, it would be the morning game. So concept is pretty stupid. I just play a game waking up, and I'm usually really, really bad at it.
Do you have a Twitter account or other social media?
I do have a Twitter account. It's den_CCG.
Awesome. And before we jump into talking about all of the exciting content we have today, I just need to remind our loyal listeners where you can find us on social media. Our Twitter, where Aaron is definitely every Marvel Snap creator's favorite reply guy, is at SnapJudgeCast. We are also, for reasons I still can't quite figure out, on TikTok, which is at SnapJudgeCast. We, of course, most importantly, we are the official podcast of Marvel Snap Zone, which means we are an active and enthusiastic partner within their Discord. You can find a link to join the Discord in the show notes to this episode, found in the YouTube description or on the podcast app itself. You should join a Discord. You should join our community. It's awesome. It is friendly. It's competitive minded, and it's all around awesome. If you would like to try to reach us through all of the kick spam that Glazer has subjected us to, we are also available via email at snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Mastodon, everyone's favorite extinct animal social media network, at snapjudgments with an E at tabletop.vip. But most importantly, the golden child of our socials, our YouTube channel, where you can find daily, weekdaily usually, but also sometimes on weekends, content from Glazer, which is at SnapJudgePod. Aaron, our loyal listeners, what would they find on the YouTube channel if they were to go there right now?
So tomorrow we've got a Thanos deck, and then Thursday another Thanos deck, because I think Thanos is coming back around to being really good in the meta again. But more importantly for most people, in addition to getting all these new decks, you get two decks every single day. We are also doing the biggest giveaway in Marvel Snap history. For every 100 subs to the YouTube, we're giving away another season pass. We're up to 7 season passes we're giving away, with a grand prize of the season pass plus every single Token Tuesday for the month of July. Subscribe to the YouTube. Check us out. You'll have to like do a retweet thingy too, but it's all very easy and painless, and you get a chance to get some free stuff. So check it out.
Awesome. Really exciting. Again, you should definitely check out the YouTube and the Twitter for more details about what Glazer keeps claiming in his Marvel Snap Zone articles is the largest giveaway in Marvel Snap history. But let's talk about something that is going to cost you, though, which our giveaway is not, which is the 3,000 tokens for this week's new card. Den, tell us your thoughts on Miguel here, who has the text: first time this moves to a location destroy an enemy card there. So how does Spider-Man 2099 land for you?
It's really difficult to have a clear idea of this card simply because he has a extremely tough competition in the form of Shang-Chi in the game. Like when you're being compared to one of the best cards in the game for quite a while, actually, like I think Shang-Chi would arguably be in everyone's top three for best tech card in Marvel Snap ever. It's pretty difficult to compare. And I think for now, he hasn't lived up to the comparison. Like most of the move decks I've seen still play Shang-Chi, unfortunately. So I will attribute it to the price where people were busy with the Infinity League and other things for now. But it's not looking so hot for the card right now.
Glazer?
So if you're playing move anyway, I think he's a very good card. At that point, he's operating largely as something like a 4-9 to 4-11, and if you're lucky, much more than that. And that kind of stats from a card, is especially a 4-drop, is not easy to come by. At that point, he's basically giving you the same stats as like a Dark Hawk, and we know how good Dark Hawk is, right? So is that going to be every game? No. Are you always going to want him? Absolutely not. But 4-6 is a good enough base stat line that I really like the card. And further, I'm a really, really big fan of... So, Bohe, I actually don't know how to pronounce that. Den, do you have any idea how to pronounce that?
I would say Bohe.
Let's go Bohe. New Marvel Snap Zone writer Bohe on one of our private channels shared this Thanos deck that's running, like, it's basically move Thanos, and I was like, there's no way this is good. So I played it a few games on ladder and dominated, and I was like, okay, let's try Gold Conquest. Let's see if ladder's just soft. And then I went undefeated in 3 Gold Conquest games. So, like, 2099 is a really, like, key part of that deck. It's like half destroy and half move, and I think it might just be a good card. Look, it's not Shang-Chi, right? Like, no card is Shang-Chi. Shang-Chi can be fundamentally infinite power on your side of the board. Spider-Man 2099 is not going to be that. He's got a hard cap fundamentally on how much power he can be. However, it's still quite a lot, and it's still, like, a really good rate, so it's a worthwhile card to play and have.
I wonder if some of the disappointment, to sort of drill down on what you two are saying here, I wonder if some of the disappointment about this card is that people viewed it as a tech card rather than a value utility card, right? Where we wanted this to be a new Shang-Chi, when instead it's really just a utility card with upside, where yeah, it will always swing you 6 plus some power. Well, not always, but most settings where there's something on your opponent's side of the board where you move him, he's going to be 6 plus power with the opportunity to have the sort of Shang-Chi upside. And I think maybe if we have that sort of more realistic assessment of the card, it seems like to have landed in a good place. But I don't, you know, obviously, I think you're both correct that nothing can compete with Shang-Chi. Having, you know, lost a decent amount to Shang-Chi today playing some Silver and Proving Grounds games, you know, it's hard to beat that value. And it's hard to, you know, the way in which the role that that card plays in the metagame. But I think Spider-Man is still, I think, a really interesting card if we approach it in sort of more as a value card than sort of the all-encompassing sort of suppressive card that Shang-Chi or Enchantress or anything like that is.
This does do one nice thing that Shang doesn't, though. It snipes out those early game Thors and Lockjaws and Angelas and Bishops, and that has a lot of value, at least in the current metagame.
That's totally fair. Something Shang cannot do.
I love a lot of these points, and I think it's probably because I'm gonna say us because I haven't had time to properly work with the card, but I guess a lot of people that have played the card up until this point probably didn't get that far into like testing it and refining it, and this is what I meant by it probably will take a little bit of time for more people to invest the token into it, more people to actually like find a good list with it. And we're still we're trying to find like connections with the card. And for now, the connection is Shang-Chi. And that's probably true. Like it's too much of a comparison to live up to. So let's find it a more like doable comparison and give it a shot there.
Yeah. Awesome. Go ahead, Glazer.
Go ahead.
One more quick sort of rapid fire thoughts. before we talk about the OTA changes, which is next up in our queue. We're at the end of the Spider-Man / Into the Spider-Verse season. Overall, where would you say that these cards have landed? So coming into this, I think people were really hyped for a lot of these cards. Ghost Spider, Silk, Spider-Man 2099, and of course, everybody's favorite Spider-Ham. Where do we sort of see the sort of spider season having landed now that we're here in the final week?
I'm personally a little disappointed. I guess I really wanted Move to come back and be like an ongoing, a destroy, a discard. Like, I really wanted to see Move be a deck that most people could pick up and expect having result with it. Well, I feel like we're still in the, we have to experiment with it. We have to build like 4, 5, 6 lists so one of them sticks out. We have to adapt to the metagame, play tech cards. I feel like we haven't found just the Move deck the same way like Discard has one, the same way like Destroy has one, where you just fit a ton of that synergy into a deck and you should expect like a minimum from it. I feel like Move still has to go the extra mile. And particularly, I've been really surprised with Silk. I thought like Silk would be a great card just even outside of Move. I mean, it's a 2/5. It should be good overall. And I feel like it just hasn't found its spot yet. Like, it's been played a little bit in the good card Stature deck, but even there, like, it's not a staple yet. So I don't know if it's just the price, because, I mean, in the end, only one card ended up in Series 4. Silk stayed in Series 5. Or it's just that these cards were not good enough. Like, I want to believe it's the price, and I hope like we'll see more incremental power come to Move as more players unlock these cards. But for now, I'm a little sad that we don't have that Move deck the same way other big synergies have theirs.
I think what we were always looking at with Move was going to be a Move package, not a Move deck. And I think we have that Move package. The other deck I tried 2099 in was also the stats deck, right? I made a stats deck that basically runs, like, they already run Miles. So I replaced two of the early drops with Iron Fist and Spider-Gwen, Ghost Spider. And then I just threw 2099 in as like an extra card that could eat something on occasion and get like some decently big stats, right? Like, that's what those stats decks want. And it ended up working out really well. That's another deck I haven't lost with 2099. I think that package is really where Move is going to end up as a quality thing instead of being a full deck. And ultimately, I'm happy with the season, but it doesn't rest on the Move cards. It rests on the one non-Move card we got. I think Spider-Ham is meta-warping.
Yeah, Spider-Ham just... I didn't mention it because it's not part of the Move package, but yeah, Spider-Ham definitely, I think, is the card of the month, mm-hmm. at least in the short period of time we've had to assess it. And particularly like during the Creator Clash tournament that I was at last weekend. I mean, the card released on the Tuesday, and I think out of 18 players, more than 10 had it in their lineup. That's how fast players picked up on the card, where most of us figured, like, we won this card in one of our two decks for one of the biggest tournaments we've been part of, and we just had, like, 3 days to test it.
Absolutely. All right, let's dig into the OTA changes. So real quick, I'll go over them for our loyal listeners. Dr. Doom, his bots are now 4 power rather than 5. Red Skull was sadly restored to his previous status. This is definitely a card that could go away from my point of view. And Nimrod got a buff from 5 power to 6. While Nick Fury got a buff in the sense that his cost was reduced, but the cost of his cost reduction was that he is now 5 strength rather than 7. So he is a 4/5 with the same text. So, gentlemen, what do we think about these OTA changes? Were they big meta shakeups? Or was this sort of just another one of those sort of small tweaks that took some of the heat and oxygen out of the format, but didn't really transform it?
I'll do my victory lap one last time. I called on the podcast with Educated Collins. We talked about Doom like 18 sections in a row, that Doom was going to get nerfed. Everyone yelled at me. And I was like, no, that's what they do. They nerf cards like Doom. And sure enough, 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, whatever it is, math is hard. Doom has changed. She's still good. Slightly worse, but like the Sarah change, not terrible. I hate Red Skull and I wish it would go away. I don't want to play a Nazi. I know it's a card game. I know it's a comic book character. It's a literal Nazi. It's an allegory for Hitler. Please go away. That's like Shuri's Skull is fine again. Like it's not as good as Bounce, so don't bother. Nimrod, I don't think did enough to actually infect the card. And Nick Fury created whole new archetypes, which we'll talk about soon. Dan?
Yeah, I love this Balan fetch. Like for Marvel Snap Zone, I'm usually in charge of analyzing the OTAs. And I think the very first one they opened with, which was back then the Enchantress to a 4/6, the Sandman one. I think we were all like, if these are the OTAs, the game is going to be extremely dynamic and we're just going to keep innovating every single week because the first one was so big. And then we had like, I think, 4 or 5 where we realized, all right, that's probably what the real OTAs are going to look like. Help cards that we haven't seen in a while, see if they're good in their new form. Like, for example, the Collector took, I think, 4 weeks or like 3 weeks to actually become a thing after its nerf. Orca, unfortunately, never came back. Shanna, unfortunately, never really came back either. But it felt like this would be closer to what the OTAs would be in reality. And I feel like this is much closer to the first OTA than any other one. I mean, Doctor Doom was a meta warping card. Nimrod was a card that a lot of people wanted to use but couldn't because of its power. We all know what 514 Red Skull was, so there wasn't much testing there. Like, we literally opened the internet, looked for a deck that was there a month ago, and just queued that exact same deck to see if it was still good. And Nick Fury, I think, released in September. I think it was the season pass card for September. And since October, probably, everyone was like, when are you going to buff it? Like, we have the deck. We know where we want to play it. We know what we want to do with the card. It's just not good enough. So I feel like even if it's not clear yet if that archetype is good enough, at least a lot of people have played Nick Fury. And I feel like outside of just is the card good now, how many people are playing it is a testimony of a good buff. Like, it gave people a reason to try it again, and that's enough. I mean, in the end, you're buffing a card because you wanted to see more play. And I think all these cards went the directions they were supposed to. The buff card saw more play, the nerf card saw less play. That's perfect OTA.
Did Doom see less play because of OTA or because of Spider-Ham or some combination?
It's hard because both happened at the same time. I don't know, honestly. It's, I actually didn't ask myself that question. I just was happy to see less of it and actually, like,
me too.
See other six costs in the game and, like, different play patterns.
You know what feels good?
Probably, like, I probably would attribute more to Spider-Ham, but I don't even know if we'll ever get the real answer because I think only Second Dinner has it. If you listen to this, Second Dinner, I'm really curious. Please tell us.
I think because they were on top of each other like that, though, I think it would be even hard for Second Dinner to, like, untangle them. Like, 2 days.
Yeah, maybe they don't even know themselves.
Yeah. 2 days is not really a lot of time to get meaningful data, even with a large set like they have. So, and particularly because Spider-Ham came out first. So, like, we don't know if Dr. Doom saw more answers before he got nerfed and et cetera, et cetera. All right. So that brings us to the other big news, sort of news controversy. I don't know, the big changes. We've sort of talked about this sort of in theory on the show. It's actually, I think, since the relaunch, since we've come to Marvel Snap Zone, I think we've talked about this with every single one of our guests. Isn't that right, Aaron? We sort of talked about this issue.
Yes. But it's, now we know what the solution is.
We do know what the solution is. So, which is Spotlight caches. If you've been, this has been a big part of the Marvel Snap discourse. If you've been following it on Twitter over the last few days, plus lots of coverage on our website or our affiliated website, Marvel Snap Zone. So what's going to happen here is that for every 10 caches, it will become a Spotlight cache. All right, so Spotlight caches have a new card, plus 2 other set cards, plus 1 wild card, which are all series 4 and 5. So every 10 caches, you will open this super cache, Spotlight Cache, which will draw from a very small amount of cards and rewards. All right, the wild card is twice as likely to be Series 4 as 5, and there's no duplicate protection. All right, if you have the card already, so for example, if you have a lot of tokens and you just buy every card as they come out, or you were series complete, instead you will get a timed exclusive top tier variant. All right. And these four things are, largely speaking, I think, like straight upgrades from the current system. But the sort of more, I guess, controversial element of this is the fifth one, which is regular caches are losing a ton of tokens and gold. The amount of gold and tokens you get out of your everyday caches, which, particularly when it comes to tokens, can be pretty substantial when you're Series 3 complete. That's all going down, or in the case of gold, mostly going away. And this is a big, big, big change to the economy of Marvel Snap. Den, as our special guest, what is your take on this issue?
I think overall it's a good change because that's probably closer to how people want to collect cards. Like, I feel like although the token shop is for players like us, I will say, which have been playing for a while, we know how to assess the value of a card. Like, we know how to form an opinion, Ghost, if I might say it this way. At least I was having fun with trying to guess which card was going to be good, which card was worth the token. Like, I personally enjoyed those discussions with the community, but I think a lot of people did it. Like, I think a lot of people were anxious about their tokens and were afraid to spend. And we've seen countless people just say, I'm just hoarding. I just don't know. I'm just, like, if my favorite content creator isn't telling me this card is safe, I will never buy anything. And then we had the whole debate around the big bads and all of this. So I think overall, this is going to answer probably a lot of people's fears regarding the cards, because now they won't have to choose, which I don't necessarily know if it's good, but it's probably closer to what the majority of Marvel Snap players want. And I guess if we get closer to what the majority wants, it's probably a good change.
Right.
I don't super have strong opinions about this. I think that it's an improvement. I think I would have appreciated this when I was a less invested player. And maybe I'll appreciate it more when I've like run out of tokens. I am not the kind of person who has not bought anything, but I bought most of the new cards. I bought most of the larger token bundles. So I'm floating around, like, I think 11K tokens, I think. So for example, this season I have purchased Spider-Ham and Spider-Man 2029, but I did not purchase Silk because he just didn't see the value for me. I'm not super interested. It's also not a character that, like, I feel compelled to like want to have in my collection. So it didn't check any of the boxes that I wanted. But other cards like Living Tribunal, which I did buy, which, you know, is a card that I think is super cool, whether it's not competitive or not, I was willing to spend. But I think that this isn't going to fundamentally change anything about how I experience the game. And I think for people who are less enfranchised than me and people who are further down the collection track, I think this will overall benefit them. I am not enough of a math person to know, like, what the free gold, how that impacts people. I think that might be the biggest sort of loss leader to me for people. But I think overall, this is, I think, an improvement. But I could definitely see that there might be some drawbacks, particularly for people who aren't willing to use the most powerful card in gaming, their credit card, when they really want something in Marvel Snap, which I'm willing to do. Like, I'm in a financial situation myself that if I really want to get something from Marvel Snap, I will spend the money. Not like thousands of dollars, but, you know, I'll buy a $100 bundle to get that stuff if I really need to. But not everybody's in that financial situation. So I think that's the one sort of question mark for me is gold and what this will do for sort of the gold economy in Marvel Snap. Because I've always felt that I've had enough gold to make the small and medium-sized purchases I wanted to do without spending money, significant amounts maybe, but, you know, I'm still having to spend money on larger purchases. I don't know how much this is going to impact the ability of people to do that. And I don't have the math skills, and I have not really found any of the arguments from any of the interlockers about this to be overly convincing about what it's going to do. So we're going to have to sort of see over time what happens.
The math people are at an impasse. They seem to have come down. Lauren, whatever, is brilliant. She helped me put together this slide. Hi, Lauren. Hopefully you're listening. She says that this is good. She's better at math than I am. Yeti says this is mediocre for me. I'm 3 cards from game complete. But, like, at this point, I'll just spend to get the last couple things, right? Like, I'm close enough that it doesn't matter. We'll see if it matters long term. This honestly feels more like Much Ado About Not the Problem. I feel like with the, like, increase in tokens, we had more or less gotten to a point where, like, if you could get a Series 3 or 2 Series 4 or a Series 3 every single month, like, you weren't doing too bad with the, like, cards being released directly into Series 4. I think the problem is still people who just enter Series 3, and I don't think this solves it. I think when you enter Series 3, it's still a nightmare to make a deck, to find a way to, excuse me, to get the hyper-specific cards you need to make a competitive deck. And I don't think this solves that at all. There's still 94 cards in Series 3 that are, like, ignored, and I think that's still the problem. Like, no one's talking about it because everyone likes to talk about the budgeting things, right? Like, tokens are big and fancy, and, like, they're shiny, and these new caches are shiny and fancy, so everyone focuses on it. But there's a certain cohort of players at all times that are going to be, like, in that early Series 3 hellhole, and if they open a bunch of crap early that doesn't synergize, there's not an answer for that. They're just going to lose a lot of games.
Well, you guys definitely put much more thought than I did into this whole issue, but I agree, especially with the Series 3 part. Like, I think for Marvel Snap to be, like, a long time game, it needs to find a reliable way for the people in Series 3 to have a way to catch up to those who are done with Series 3. Otherwise, like, if we can't close that gap, we can never, like, increase the community. We can create more communities, but we can never enlarge, like, the already existing communities. So, like, as you both already said, like, I don't think any of us has the skills or even the capacity to test this before it actually comes out, to know if that will help or not. But I hadn't, like, thought about this in regarding the Series 3 player, and that's, I think it's actually true. Like, it's probably, like, hiding in a way, like, the fact that it looks really good because there's Series 4 and Series 5 written in there, which is great, because, I mean, most of the, like, the most vocal people in the community, this is what they want to collect. But yeah, it could actually, like, enlarge the gap with those who are not done with Series 3.
I think Danny made a really good point that I do think that this hits the, like, loudest members of the community, which you could, like, sort of call, like, the middle class or middle tier Marvel Snap player, who are the people who are mostly Series 3 complete or Series 3 complete, but they're not Series 4 and 5 complete. And they didn't feel that they had easy access to 4 and 5 cards, and they had that paralysis that you mentioned again, Den, and we've talked about on the show before, of, like, not willing to spend tokens because of the quote-unquote value. And I think one of the steps when it comes to card acquisition, like, Secondary has really been trying to solve that problem by, like, sort of forcing people to spend tokens, which is kind of like what their previous sort of things that they did. And this is a bit more, like, friendly, because I think the preferred way for most Marvel Snap players who aren't necessarily the most, who are sort of medium invested, is to open the new cards in caches, because that's the most fun. Right? Like, you open it, you open the cache, and you get that adrenaline versus, like, oh yeah, I remember to check the shop when I wake up on Tuesday morning, click the button and get Spider Ham, right? And it takes the decision paralysis out of them. And I think this does solve those problems. For me, Series 3 problems are a little easier to fix in the long term if Second Dinner, like, really decides, because they could just make Series 3 caches, just open more cards. right? They could do like every 20 caches, you get 5 cards instead of 1 or something like that. Like, that's just like a very knee jerk answer. Like, I think that solving that sort of like catch up is in many ways easier than getting sort of their like grad, like their sort of postgraduate post series 3 economy, where over time, like, this is a huge roadblock, right? For their player base. Like, series 3, even if it sucks that you're like losing all these games, there's a clear path, which is either spend time or money to get your cards. Series 4 and 5, there was kind of spend money, but there wasn't always like how you spent the money and got those things wasn't always clear or fast. And it definitely wasn't time. So there's like these, this sort of roadblock has been removed. And I hope that that does solve sort of the sort of squeakiest wheel for their economy, which will allow them to address, I think, the legitimate point that Glazer pointed out, that over time, Series 3 is going to be too much of a slog for a casual or sort of, you know, less committed player to want to get through, to get to the part of the game that's probably the most fun, which is when you have a full collection or mostly full collection. All right, so let's jump right into our big topic, which is top 10 decks currently in this, the final week of June in the year of our Lord 2023, top 10 decks of Marvel Snap. Glazer, I will turn this over to you to sort of introduce to our loyal listeners what you and Den did here.
So first and foremost, it's important to note, Den insists I say this, so I'm leading with it so I don't forget. This is our opinion. Den does the tier list every single week, and that tier list on Marvel Snap Zone is pure data. This is instead, we play a stupid amount of games. Let's be clear, right? Like, we play way too much Marvel Snap, and I consume, I think, a blatantly unhealthy amount of Marvel Snap content at this point in my life. We have opinions, fairly informed opinions, given the sheer amount of time and energy we put into this game. So this is our opinion. We talked about what we thought the top 10 decks would be. There were 8 that without like any trouble, it was like 2 sentences, we completely agreed on. The other decks we decided to make a wild card round out of, and we're going to just basically vote on them quickly to come up with our number 9 and 10 on our list. There's not going to be a visual of the list as we talk, but we'll make sure that we're talking through to keep you up. And that's kind of it. Are you guys ready for wildcard decks?
Let's do this.
All right. We identified 5 wildcard decks. The next slides will be each of those decks. They are the Nick Fury Devil Dinosaur decks that started out last week, Classic Destroy, Move, Sandman Ramp, and Shuri Red Skull. So I pulled a sample deck for each where possible from the tier list article, but not always. We're going to scroll through each deck one at a time of these 5 and basically a quick one thought on each and whether you think it would be good for 9 or 10 or whether you'd like to eliminate it. Does that sound fair?
Let's go.
All right. We've got Nick Fury Devil Dino. This is our boy Fazer's deck. I chose this one largely because when he sees this, the smile on his face is going to light up Scotland. So this is Fazer's Fury. There are 1,000 versions of this. This is one I've had a lot of success with. Do we think, Den, want to lead us off? Do we think this is good for number 9 or 10?
Personally, I wouldn't think no, for the simple reason that there are too many lists going around, and we really can't say for sure which one is best. So I feel like currently the deck still needs to be refined, and it kind of lacks that good like tech card, that little spice that puts it over the edge, because that slot is like eaten up by Shang-Chi in almost every deck right now. And the thing is, because the curve is pretty high and we have a lot of 4 costs, I feel like we don't have that many opportunities to play Shang-Chi, and also like we can't protect our big cards. Like, I feel like if we were in a different metagame and that Shang-Chi would be a Cosmo, like protect us from Rogue, from Enchantress, from opposing Shang-Chi, that kind of things, the deck would probably thrive much more. But I think for now, this relative like unflexibility is hurting the deck too much to be considered as part of the best in the game.
Right.
So I actually played against this deck a lot today, and I was not impressed. Like, I think it's a cool deck, but for me playing against it, and I was playing Sandman Ramp, to be clear. Like, to me, it was sort of like ride or die with Shang-Chi. If Shang-Chi was an impactful play that they were able to get off, this deck looked really good. But games where I was able to make it so Shang-Chi wasn't like a game-flipping card didn't seem that impressive. I guess maybe the versions that I was playing against in the Slay of Darkhawk, I was seeing sort of like maybe this, maybe that changes it, giving sort of a default bigger threat than the versions I was writing into Improving Grounds in Silver today. But I was not impressed by this deck. I mean, it's a cool deck, don't get me wrong, and I think it's well constructed, but it definitely didn't feel like it was doing anything like over the top powerful, and was extremely clunky without a lot of payoff for being very clunky.
So I played this enough to, I think, know the right way to play it. The right way to play this is like the Rocks and Hawks deck, like the Devil Dino and Darkhawk deck, and then you've got Nick Fury to like high roll. Right? Like, the theory of this deck is it plays very much like a Darkhawk Devil Dino deck, like that classic deck from like whatever it was 5 months ago when that took the meta by storm, and since then the meta's moved on. But Nick Fury gives it some real, real strong top end for fundamentally when you don't have a different combo you want to play. So Fury is almost like an extra good piece that powers up Devil Dino rather than the focus of the deck. I think this might belong on the list, but I think it's too soon to know for sure, and I think we're probably eliminating it because of that.
All right.
Next up, we have Classic Destroy. This is my favorite this is not my favorite version. My favorite version runs Deadpool over Shang-Chi. I think that that makes the deck significantly more powerful because it powers up both Null and Venom to sort of absurd degrees and gives you something to kill over and over for death. But this is the quote-unquote classic version that runs Shang over Deadpool. I think the Deadpool version probably has an argument for number 10, and I'm not sure I want to eliminate it yet, but Den has a really strong argument for why it shouldn't. So please take it away, Den.
My idea is it's probably top 10 right now, like in this precise metagame where it's like nicely protected and in a perfect environment. The problem with this is the deck is in the perfect environment and it's not that good compared to the other decks. Like, this is not on, this is like so far from balanced Lockjaw level, but it's not even on the tier 2 decks level. So I feel like if this deck ever becomes popular enough that people would care about it, suddenly like the deck is just gonna get like bullied up to crazy levels, in my opinion, for the simple reason that we just play Armor and Cosmo and the deck completely crumbles. So if Destroy in the perfect environment isn't a consideration to be amongst the best decks, imagine what happens when people actually try to counter it.
Yeah, I agree with Den here. I think Honest Destroy remains as mid as ever. It's fine. It has cool synergies. It's fun when it does its stuff. It's default powerful, but it just does not have the ceiling that a lot of the other decks in the meta do. So
you know what has taken it down a huge notch? The Shuri Red Skull buff, because that put Armor back into the meta, and like I was having actually really good success with this. This has a very good matchup into the Lockjaw decks and an okay matchup into Bounce, depending on how much Null you can get going. But like, while that matchup is really strong, you run into that Red Skull deck and they drop an Armor on a lane and you're just like, well, that was sad, let's move on, I've lost this game, right? Like, so it's just, I think you guys are probably right. Let's move on. This is Move. I grabbed the Junkat Snap Fan Open winner because, I mean, it's the most successful. I made one change. I put 2099 in for Vision. 2099 probably goes in for Stegron, if we're being totally honest, but I like Stegron more than Vision.
I like Stegron. Like, I've been experimenting with the card lately, and I think Stegron is a good card. Like, as long as Zabu is in the game, to be honest.
Well, this deck doesn't Zabu. It just plays a really good tempo game.
Well, I haven't had time to play this deck enough. Like, a lot of people ask me whether it would be in the next Conquest tier list, because this is much more of a tournament deck than it is a ladder deck. I mean, I feel at this point. And the thing is, I have never, I think in ever, like, since I started playing Marvel Snap, I've never been a huge fan of Bounce. Not that I don't like the synergies, but I just always had other things to focus on. So every time a new Bounce deck kind of rises to popularity, I kind of have to relearn from scratch. And so it's hard for me to have an opinion, because I think for now my opinion is just I'm not good enough on the deck to objectively be able to say if it's really good or not. But I do think that the fact that so many people are agreeing about a move deck is a really good sign, because that's about the first time that ever happened. So that sign alone tells me this has potential, and this is worth exploring for sure.
I think it's got a real claim to be number 10. I think it's a master's deck. I think people who are good with move are really good with move. But I think that move and the ladder version, for the record, in my personal opinion, runs Wave instead of Stegron. And I think that's like the main difference. I think it's otherwise ultimately basically the same deck. But I think that like this has a real claim for number 10 just because like the top end players with it are so good with it.
Yeah, like a deck which rewards the pilot usually tends to be a really good deck.
I've never played nor played against this variant, so I don't have any strong opinions.
Okay, let's move on. I'm going to stick that in number 10 for now, and we can see if it moves to 9 or not. Electro Ramp. So, anyone want to go first? Because I have really strong opinions.
I guess I'll go first. I've
I
been
have
playing the
really strong
KM
opinions as well.
best version of this, which doesn't have America. I found the deck to be extremely strong. I think it has like a like I think Sandman felt really well positioned to me. I think it did a good job of sort of like locking the board down, and there's a lot of decks that like want to do multiple plays on turns 4, 5, and 6, and this deck really prevents that. It has several other sort of like outs to get itself out of tricky situations. Like Arlan Zola is an extremely like powerful card in this deck. I've just been like really impressed with it. I found it to be fun and relatively consistent, question mark. I mean, it has sort of the issues. I think KM's version has even bigger issues maybe than this one does, because this one has Spider Ham while his is running
Iceman or
Iceman. Oh,
Sunspot.
no, what's her name?
Oh,
Nebula. Nebula.
Nebula. Yeah,
Instead of
most
Spider Ham.
people are running like a
And
mix of disruption and points.
yeah. So Nebula is like a much worse late game draw. Like, like a Spider Ham, if you don't have, Sandman down is a playable card on like turn 5, right? Like the comparative with like Nebula isn't really, right? And there's a little bit of an exaggeration, but I think that this deck, I think, feels like it deserves to be in the top 10. I wouldn't put it in like the top 5, but I definitely think that this is a sort of consistent and safe bet.
So I'll be very honest. I cannot stand Electro Ramp. Like, I think this deck has done its time, and it was a nice gimmick. And at some point, gimmicks have to die. But the metagame is really good for it currently. Like, a great like out of Electro Ramp can compete with a lot of decks point wise, and there's the bounce matchup that you can kind of feed off in order to get the win rate up. Like, I think today alone, I've seen at least like two or three people share the fact that they've run the Conquest Infinity Gauntlet with the deck. So there is something for sure. The thing is it good enough? And it's kind of the same as Destroy in a way. It's like this deck is currently in the perfect environment. I mean, the best deck in the game will come to it, but in my opinion, it's
Yeah, it's
Bounce.
bounce.
Gets countered. I'm using my fingers because I think a good bounce player will make you look silly, whatever deck you play against him. Its best counter represents a large part of the metagame and kind of feeds the win rate of the deck. And because we have that like specific environment, we're talking about Electro Ramp. At the moment, we find a way, or Bounce gets nerfed, or like at least like Bounce stops being the best deck in the game, I think Electro Ramp just gets out and never comes back. And personally, that's not the kind of decks I want to spend time on. But I mean, I understand people might want to.
I think it's weak to too much of the top 10 to be high in the top 10. But I think, look, I think it's probably a better position than Move right now, but it's extraordinarily close. But like one of the top five most played decks right now is, is Patriot. And Patriot just eats this for lunch, right? Like one of the most played decks right now is Lockjaw. And Lockjaw, unless you get that Sandman down on four, every single game does not care. Like it just knows what it's doing, so it goes off a turn sooner, right?
There are other decks we could say the same. Like punishes you extremely hard.
Yeah, Lockdown punishes us. So Spider-Ham gives it game against Bounce, but like the versions that don't run Spider-Ham, I just roll with Bounce. Like everyone keeps being like Sandman, oh that matchup. I'm like, I don't like after I got it out of my head that I just auto lost the matchup. I just beat the matchup, which is probably means Bounce needs a nerf, right? But like, I think I'd have Move ahead of this just because I think Move has enough of a higher ceiling, even if this is a little more consistent.
Yeah, I would put Move ahead of it for a simple reason that I am quite certain Move is able to get better. Well, I'm also quite certain Electro Ramp will not.
So then let's put Move at 9 and Sandman at 10 and see if something can knock Sandman out of the 10 spot. That sound good for everybody?
Seems reasonable.
Oh, bye, Sandman. Welcome back, Shuri Sauron. Has anyone played this yet?
Yes.
It's gross, right?
I will never play this deck, so... You guys can have strong opinions.
It's still gross. Thank God, Bounce and certain versions. It's my article for tomorrow. It'll be the article that's up already. I did a deck of the day on this just because, like, part of it is a history section. I think the history of this deck is really fun. I just don't like. I mean, this is better than Sandman, right? Like, it's just better than Sandman.
It is.
All right, so bye, Sandman. Sandman almost made the list.
For a short time.
Do you think this is better than Move?
I think in the current... Like, I think it would... My question would be, depends who plays it. Because I think the average player will... get much better result with Shuri Zero or Shuri Sauron or Shuri whatever you want to call it. Like I think this is one of the easiest decks. I don't know if ever, but it's definitely like in my top five list of decks that you can pick up and immediately post results. While Move is kind of the opposite. It's kind of the you're gonna pick it up and you're gonna suck at Move for your first few days because you need to learn the synergies, you need to learn which card move where, you need to learn the locations and all that kind of things. So I think like if you're the kind of player that just picks a list online, tries it and see if you like it or not, Move will make you believe it's really bad, while Shuri Sauron will make you believe it's really good. But if you start digging a little bit and you spend time on it, you're gonna see that Shuri Sauron is limited while Move has much more, like, potential to explore.
I'm willing to let you have final answer. What do you think for 9 and 10? Which one goes in 9 and which one goes in 10?
I think right now, in the current state of things, Shuri Sauron goes at 9. But I'm confident with more time, we're going to reverse those spots really soon.
Yeah, I can live with that. I hate Shuri Red Skull so much. It is, like, one of my least favorite things. I would have been so happy if they just left it dead. Shuri had other good homes. We don't need the, like, stupid brain dead Red Skull thing. And sorry if you really like this deck and think it's super high skill. But, like, it's just kind of not, right? Like, there's occasional choices on, like, the last turn of the game. And as you get there, there's not a whole lot to do. Also, I think the Kitty Pryde variants are slightly better than the normal variants, because Kitty Pryde's the best card in the game. So you should probably just put Kitty Pryde into stuff.
Might be.
All right. So we have our numbers 9 and 10. Number 9 is Shuri Saran. And number 9 is Shuri Saran. And number 10 is Move. Decision we think we might be shifting in the future. We have our next 8 decks. So I think how we do this is we sort of take 2 decks at a time. We'll talk about the first one first. Spoiler, I'm pretty sure the first one's just going to be number 1. Then Bounce is just going to be number 1, right?
I mean, unless you want to fight for it, but yeah.
Like, I don't...
To me, it's number 1, and it's unfortunately not even close. Yeah,
I think
Bounce right now needs, like, I think compared to the other decks, there's not one card that beats Bounce. Like, a lot of people want to make you believe Wave beats Bounce. It doesn't. Yeah. You need Wave into Odin. You need Wave into Sandman. You need Wave into something. If you just play Conquest against someone and your first wave doesn't get 4 or 8 cubes from them, you are not favored to win, because now they know. And now they're going to go off at the right time. And now when you're going to wave and develop 3 points, they're going to develop 25, and you're never going to come back.
Yeah, that there's no joke. Like, you just put 25 to 30 power in 2 lanes, and then the other lane's like 16 power, 17 power casually, right? Like, the power that this deck puts out is completely insane. The closest thing this deck has to an answer, I think right now, is Invisible Woman into Killmonger does a decent job of slowing it down. This is, by the way, not my favorite Bounce list. I think it's close. I think Jeff is better than Collector in this list, and I think that these lists really do want America Chavez and Iron Man, but, like, this is a perfectly fine list. It almost doesn't matter.
That's the crazy thing with Bounce currently. It's really hard to miss it. Like, it's really hard to not build Bounce correctly, because I feel like there are 13 or 14 cards which you can play, and it's just going to depend on your playstyle. Like, for example, I'm a very reactive player. I really like to disrupt my opponent, so I tend to play Electra. I tend to play Jeff, as you mentioned, to be able to go onto locations I wouldn't be able to reach. Like, I like display patterns. Like, I feel good about display patterns, but I could absolutely and completely see someone go with what, like, D-Money played in Creator Clash, which was literally a point slam deck. He didn't even have Spider-Ham. He had Ant-Man instead. And he was literally, I am going to put more points than you do. And he did that. He literally outpointed everyone in most matchups. So when, like, you have so many possibilities and all your possibilities are good, you're just a good deck. Like, it's that simple. I mean, you can play the deck 4 different ways, and each way is just good depending on the matchup.
I got nothing super fancy to add. Look, this is as good. It's harder to play, for sure, than Shuri Red Skull, right? Like, I've seen some bad Bounce players where I'm just like, you should be beating me.
Probably.
Right? But
yeah, it's probably one of the hardest deck to master, and that's probably why it's not a problem. If this deck had the current power it has, but the simplicity of a Shuri Sauron or that kind of decks, I think it would be nerfed already. Yeah. It's because people can't abuse it as effectively as other decks, because it's pretty complicated to run, that I think we just had Beast changed. We didn't have, like, a murder on Kitty Pryde or that kind of card yet.
They're going to have to kill Kitty. I don't know what else you do.
No.
Look, I love Kitty, but, like, every time that we all go, this is probably the best card in the game, they've nerfed it. Every single time. There's not an exception thus far.
We just need to stop saying
okay,
it.
So, never mind. Spider-Ham's the best card in the game. Let's move on.
Oh, yeah. I'll go.
Sorry, Roy, do you have any Bounce thoughts beyond WoW?
No, I mean, it's just an extremely impressive and powerful deck. Flexible. Not my style of deck. I don't enjoy playing it. But it's definitely powerful, inarguably.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Evolved Lockdown will be our default number two for the time being until we look at a third deck. I think this deck fell off as people figured out how to play against it. I think it was really, really good when people didn't know what they're doing. And A, Spider-Ham's existence is really bad for this deck. And B, people just putting Dracula back into the Lockjaw version shut down that Storm nonsense pretty damn well. And now here we are. It's like very good, but I think it's a clear step down from where it was.
Yes, like to me, it's just the meta has been a little tougher for the deck overall. It's Lockjaw just, I mean, you storm a lane and the guy goes Lockjaw Wasp, gets a big guy, and you just know another big guy is coming. Like suddenly the storm lane is not the win, and then you also expect like a spider, a Doctor Doom or a Vision. It's really difficult for the deck overall. Yet, it's a really good deck. It's just much more punishing than in the past. So it stays in the conversation. It's just you don't have as many good free wins as you had before by just going storm into Spider-Man and winning the game because your opponent couldn't play.
Yep. Right.
It's hard to disagree with what you said. I think that the ceiling has gone down a lot on this deck. But it's just consistently powerful. The high evolutionary, like, zapper cards are really powerful. Like, just, like, very, very powerful, and that's just going to win you games sometimes. But the sort of, like, what is the term I'm looking for? Like, auto wins that it felt like this deck had maybe in the first couple of weeks it existed, I've gone away. It's much more finicky now. Like, you've just got to make sure that you hit the right storm lane, figure out what you want under storm. And I do actually think that the changes that they made to sort of Spider-Man and Professor X actually achieved what they wanted, which is to make this deck less consistent. I think that's like a little like underappreciated, I guess, of a nerf. But I think I'm where this deck is right now. I'm fine with it being what it is. More counterplay. Players have to put more work into it, but it still does powerful and cool things. It makes it feel like your high evolutionary is worth the credits.
All right, let's keep moving. Evolved Lockjaw. So this is better than the previous deck, right?
Well, the previous that we just saw, or all the previous.
No, ones? Just it's not better than Bounce. We like Bounces, guys. We're gonna probably leave Bounce at number one unless someone has a completely amazing argument.
Well, my argument is Dr. Octopus makes Lockjaw favorite to Bounce.
Does it really?
Oh, yeah.
I need to 100%. Test it. So my version has a real, like, the version I basically pulled out Doom and Magneto and shoved in, like, it's basically this exact list. I pulled in Spider-Ham and Infinaut for Doom and Magneto in this exact list. And it's not bad into Bounce just because it goes so tall that, like, Bounce is often just like, And if, like, Doc Ock wins that matchup, then, like, we might have a tie for number one. I'm not ready to put it ahead of Bounce right now, though.
I would say Bounce is the best deck in the game. But I have been very surprised with Lockjaw's ability to adapt lately. I mean, right now there are, like, three lists of Lockjaw. You have the anti-Spider-Ham with the Infinaut. You have the more flexible one, which is trying to play around Shang-Chi with like Thor, Dracula, Odin, Doom, these kind of cards. You have the fully like kind of stupid points, which is Giganto, Vision, Magneto, Infinite, Hulk, that kind of things. And to me, like, I think the same way of what we said about Bounce. It's if a deck is already at the top and still able to adapt and still able to dodge what the competition throws at him, you know you have an exceptionally good deck. Because Shang-Chi was supposed to kill Lockjaw. Like, when everyone started playing Shang-Chi, a lot of people believed, okay, like, Lockjaw is going to calm down. It didn't. Then we had Spider-Ham. A lot of people were like, all right, we're finally going to remove, like, a good card from Lockjaw, and it's going to calm down. It didn't. At some point, we're going to have to assume that it's just that Lockjaw is that good, and it's going to stick.
How do you play Dr. Octopus in this? When are you playing him into Lockjaw? Are you playing him in a lane alone? Are you playing him where the opponent already has a card or two? Like, what's the theory? How do you play him?
Against Bounce, your goal is just to grab their hand and throw as much as possible onto the board, because Angela doesn't trigger, Bishop doesn't trigger. If you make it during a turn where they didn't play a lot of cards, Hitmonkey is completely useless. You have information where is Iron Man, you get their Shang-Chi where they don't necessarily want to use it. It's basically like Bounce is an extremely flexible deck. Like, it's probably the most flexible deck in the game. And if you can take some of that flexibility away from them, you already had like a pretty good step. Like, I think it's a step in the right direction. So this is just how I went about like Dr. Octopus. But so, there are other ways like to mess around with opponents.
So I'm asking out of sheer ignorance. I've never played the Dr. Octopus version. How is that seems similar to Wave in that if you know it's coming on turn 5, shouldn't you be able to go off on turn 5 and then just play the one last big card on turn 6?
Yes, that can happen, but then at least as the Lockjaw player, you have full information. Yeah. In the matchup of Lockjaw against Bounce, what's extremely strong for Bounce is that it keeps the opponent guessing for as long as possible. And so you can wait to see where most of the points from the Lockjaw player are going to come and then beat him on the two lanes that you are able to beat him. Because usually, like, Lockjaw has one lane where, unless you have Shang-Chi, Valkyrie, or a card of the sort, you're just not beating them because the amount of points is completely stupid. Dr. Octopus forces them to commit before they get that information. And the other thing is just pull Shang-Chi. Like, Dr. Octopus is going to bite the bullet, but that means Hulk doesn't take it, Infinite doesn't take it, Magneto doesn't take it. And then there's always the high roll of it comes out of Lockjaw, like from a Wasp or something like this, and that makes it impossible to predict for the opponent. And even in the other matchups, like, I just liked the ability of telling my opponent, trust me, you're going to play in the Lockjaw lane. I know you don't want to because there's 30 points there and your points are completely useless in that regard. But trust me, you're going to invest into that Lockjaw lane and all that investment is going to go down the drain.
So I really like keeping Spider-Ham. I think I'm going to try it, but I'm going to try it for Jubilee.
Sure. I mean, you can.
I don't like Jubilee.
I'm not saying it's
in this deck.
I like Jubilee a lot. Not necessarily in
this deck. Yeah, I like Jubilee a lot as a card, but yeah.
All right, let's move on to Patriot, which is the next deck here under discussion. So what do you two gentle folks think about everybody's favorite blank card dot deck?
I'm struggling with Patriot lately because the deck has everything it needs to be incredible, and it's not. And I can't put my finger on why. Like, I think at this point, I'm just asking myself, like, is Patriot not good enough? Like, does it just not produce enough points? Is that the problem with the card? And I just can't put my finger on it. I think it's definitely a top 10 deck, like, no problem about it. But I feel like there's something that needs to be figured out with this deck so we can take the next step, and we haven't.
I think a lot of it is it's still running Debris. Like, it's running cards like Debris, and I'm not sure even Iron Lad is right. Like, these are very powerful cards, right? But how sure are we there what this deck actually wants to be doing? I'm not. Debris was here, like, it's fundamentally very often a worse version of Squirrel Girl in this deck, right? Like, in that your opponent can eat it or do something with it. Like, and, like, most decks aren't filling up locations to the point where Debris is really great right now. So, like, it's running cards like Debris that I don't think are great. And because it's running Iron Lad, it's running Brood and Mr. Sinister. And both of those cards are, like, bad if Iron Lad isn't the one that hit them. It's just, I think that, like, the way we're building it was built for a meta that no longer exists. I still think this is a top 10 deck, but I think you're right. It's on the lower end. Like, I think it beats Lockdown, but I don't think it's as good of a meta in a deck into the meta as Lockdown.
Yeah, I like this. I like this analysis a lot. Like, I think we've been stuck on some patterns, because Patriot has been here for, well, seemingly ever at this point. And we need to make these patterns evolve. Like, we need to reconsider and go from scratch in a way with Patriot. Like, just rethink the whole Patriot concept. And yeah, I mean, I completely agree with your analysis.
So for now, it's the lowest of the decks we've talked about so far. Like, below Lane Lockdown, even though it beats
Yes, which is...
Roy, anything to add for Patriot? I know you don't like it.
Yeah. No, I was wondering if it's four or five.
I think the reason, I think Debris being here might be a relic of the latter meta, because I think you lose to Galactus if you don't have Debris with this deck. Like, I just think you just lose. What do you do against Galactus with this deck? With
Iron Man. Iron Man's really good against Galactus.
I mean, he can be. Yeah, he can be. But I would say that Debris gives, plus Iron Man, gives this deck a lot of outs against Galactus on the ladder. I don't think.
Yeah, but see, that's where I agree completely with Glazer said. Like, who's playing to beat Galactus nowadays? Like, the card has been nerfed. It represents, like, I don't know, 1%, maybe less than the metagame. And yet we're still building Patriot to beat it. Like, why are we building any deck in Marvel Snap right now to build Galactus, when we should be building to beat Bound, to beat Lockjaw, to beat High Evo, to beat these kind of cards?
I mean, definitely, because if you're in low tier ladder, you will run into Galactus. Non-infinite Galactus. Okay. Non-infinite ladder. But I mean, in Conquest, I definitely been surprised every time I see Debris in these kind of decks. So, but definitely, the logic of Galactus would be to me. But otherwise, I think you all are spot on. This deck is strong, but not great. Actually, I have a question about Iron Lad for you too. I found Iron Lad to be a very well-mean card at best. You know, a card that's like fine, but not great. Like, what do you two think about Iron Lad?
I think raw. Go ahead, please. No.
Go ahead. No, go. I think it's the best card in the game by a freaking mile.
I knew he was going to say that.
Like, I will stand by it. And although I think there are cards that are currently showing more potential, I think you can show me any metagame, any situation, and I will find a way to play Iron Lad. And I don't think any other card can say that.
Kitty.
Kitty doesn't thrive in the metagame where Sarah and Surfer are the best deck because Killmonger is everywhere.
Yeah, because Invisible Woman. Yeah, I could see that. I think this is the wrong meta for most Iron Lad decks right now. I think Iron Lad's an incredible card. Like, so if we were a month ago, right, and like that Darkhawk deck had stayed the best, this would have taken that Darkhawk deck to an unheard of level. I think that there's a lot of decks that it works that way with. I just don't think that, like, I think that the decks that are best in the meta are pure point slam decks, and that's not the kind of meta where Iron Lad thrives.
Well, this is a little insight for the listeners, but we actually debated, should we put Good Cards Wave on this list? And I'm a big believer that we should have. But I also agreed when Glazer said I don't think it deserved to be there. I do agree that the current way the deck is played is not top 10. That I can completely get behind. But I've worked on it since coming back from Creator Clash. I think I'll show it tomorrow. I think I have a list that deserves to be top 5. Like, no joke.
Definitely.
I will be doing a video on that for Friday.
Awesome. So make sure you go to MarvelSnapZone.com and read Den's article, which should be up maybe the day before this goes live. And then on Friday, which should be the day after this goes live, you can watch Glazer's video about it. So lots of synergy, to use the corporate turn.
So, wait, I just want to say one more thing before we move on from this deck. It's so ridiculous working on the same site as you in safety. Like, because I'll build a deck, and then I just go to your articles. I'm like, oh, well, that's just a better version of my idea. And then I just take it. I'm like, oh, I just won, like, 8 games in a row. All right, next deck. Like, this is stupid.
All right, let's move on to the... Speaking of next decks, let's move on to Pure Evolution. A pure version of the sort of almost all of the high evolutionary cards. This, I guess you could say this is like kind of an abomination deck, I guess is the best way to put it. You know, it sets it apart from sort of some of the other high evolutionary variants. It's much more about that card. Thoughts about this deck? Feelings?
It's, opinions? It wins a lot, but I don't know why.
I know why, because the tech cards, and this is what annoys me about a lot of decks in the current metagame, is I feel like a lot of decks are listed here because they can play Wave and Shang-Chi, compared to other archetypes who do not have the room or who do not have the synergies to do so. I feel like if we play Destroy against High Evolutionary, but High Evolutionary is not allowed, like... to have tech cards, basically we're just like, go nuts on your gimmick and see who wins. I think High Evolutionary loses so much. But because we don't need the full gimmick, while we do for discard, while we do for destroy, while we do for other synergies, we can play the really, really good cards in the metagame. And these cards just put you up a tier, honestly. Like, they really boost the overall win rate of the deck. And that's, to me, why this one and like high evolutionary decks in general are so good, is because they've become the new good cards archetype. You play the package, you play the two or three best tech cards in the game currently, and if you have those tech cards right, you have a top 5 deck almost every single time.
That's why I didn't want a wave deck on here. It felt like this is, at least until you release that deck, released that deck yesterday as of people hearing this. this is the best version of the what used to be Doomwave, right? Like, this is the best version of that deck. Do I want to play it more? I just don't think it's that good. I think, like, it's the middle of tier one. Like, is this better than Patriot? Kinda? Not really? Like, I think Patriot usually... I think this is better than Patriot? But I think Patriot usually beats this.
You mean this precise deck, or we're talking
like archetype? This archetype. I think that like Patriot is a generally better archetype than non-Lockjaw High Evolutionary.
I think Lockjaw would probably beat them in the one-on-one, but I think in the general environment they're going to win more because they have this adaptability, which Patriot doesn't necessarily have. Like, Patriot can fit one, max two tech cards. High Evolutionary typically runs 3, can find room for 4. And currently, the thing is, there are 2 decks, which we already talked about, like Bounce and Lockjaw. If you're able to beat one of these 2, your win rate, like, skyrockets instantly. Because these decks will snap on everybody out of confidence. If you have a way to snap back, your cube rate it becomes stupidly higher than it was in the past. And to me, Patriot hasn't found a way to do that. High Evolutionary did.
Okay, I can live with that.
I think Patriot also struggles with a Cyclops or a thing that gets a lot of value. If you can get, like, I think have a big 5, like a big turn 5 against Patriot, where you have like an abomination for like 1 or 2 and can play some other cards alongside it, maybe, you know, armor or wave or something like that. Like, I think you are in a pretty good spot. Could be wrong, but that's definitely where I found playing against Patriot, playing this sort of pure evolutionary deck, which is sort of my preferred high evolutionary build.
So I think this is, I mean, I guess this is number 3 as of right now then, because, like, it's better than Lockdown in this meta, right?
In the current meta where Lockdown gets bullied by Lockjaw, I would say yes. Okay. Right. By the way, if you like this deck and you're struggling against Bounce, you should check Freddy Babe's list from Creator Clash. He didn't play it. He was using it as a scarecrow, so we wouldn't play bounce against him. But I think his list was very creative, and he found a way to fit Odin in the deck, which I think is really, really good with Wave in the current metagame for bounce, because suddenly you go Wave on 4, Odin on 5, and bounce just doesn't play the second part of the game. So if you're looking for a little spice, definitely check that one.
Is that over armor?
Very cool.
Has to be over armor, right?
Is that over armor? I'm not sure.
It's
I can
okay.
check if you give me a no minute. I'll come back to you while we talk about the next one.
All right. That brings us to sort of perennial Snap Judgment's favorite archetype, Sarah Control. Aaron, this is a deck that you've really enjoyed throughout our time making Marvel Snap content. What do you think it is?
Right I think now? It's the third best deck in the game. I think it can struggle into High Evolutionary, but it can beat High Evolutionary. Like, I think it's close to a 50-50 matchup with High Evolutionary as you get. I think it's got probably the best matchup into bounce of any deck in the game right now. And it's got one of the best matchups into Lockjaw. I think that Shang-Chi does a great job of just winning you one lane, and that like Hitmonkey and Kitty in another lane can just go over the top of even that, right? Like, that's not very different from where we were. Den does not like this, but my personal version runs Magic, because Magic is insane in this deck. You go Magic into Sarah and Kitty on 6, and then turn 7, you can just match anything on points and still Shang-Chi something. And you've got like your whatever Invisible Woman Killmonger thing going, or you've got your Hitmonkey already hidden, so on. You've just got so many options with this deck. There's like 18 versions. I know Den has a Doom version. I think this is the third best deck in the game.
Well,
I think it's great.
I haven't tested my Doom version since the nerf. So I might take you up on that Magic idea now. Like, our discussion of the Magic happened before the Doom nerf, and that changes quite a bit. So I'll reconsider. But honestly, like, most of my opinions about decks that I did not bring at Creator Clash are at least 8 days old at this point. And like, Sarah had a lot of things going for it in those in that time. But I agree with you. I think, like, honestly, I received a lot of teasing. It wasn't nothing like out of the, like, nothing hateful or anything like that. But I don't know if you guys saw at some point, like, Glenn Jones answered a question saying Sarah is not a problem to the game, and it's rarely a top 5 deck for their numbers, which me, doing like one of the most read tier lists in the game, routinely putting Sarah in tier 1 and even in the top spot, had a lot of people come to me and be like, well, what do you have to say for this? And my answer most of the time was, first, we don't know which number they're using. Like, is this all ranks? Is this specific rank? Like, there's a lot of difference in their data and mine. They're probably being much better, obviously. But the second thing is, Sarah is, to me, the most flexible deck in the game. Like, it's one of the few decks which has a core of like max 6 cards, and then you can do whatever you want with the rest of your deck. And as we discussed already with the pure High Evolutionary deck, right now, Bounce and Lockjaw will snap you because they feel so confident. Mm. And the amount of trickery you can pull with Invisible Woman, with Shang-Chi, with Enchantress, with Killmonger, and these kind of things, you're going to make a lot of people regret they snapped before they really understood what was going on. And this alone will get Sarah's cube rate like much higher than most decks, even if the win rate isn't there. Like, it's been ages since Sarah hasn't reached like 57, 58% win rate, while Bounce or Lockjaw are there routinely. But Sarah's cube rate is stupid because it's so good at punishing overconfident decks, because you're so adaptable and you're so good at hiding what's really going on until it actually happens.
Earlier we said that Move was a Masters deck. I think Sarah is the ultimate Masters deck. People, like, when you're playing against someone who's playing Sarah and they're good, you feel like you've never played a card game before. And if you're playing against someone, Sarah, who's bad, it's just, it's easy, right? Like, it's easy mode, because you can tell that they're like just playing things in the slightly wrong location and slightly wrong order. And like, I think that's always going to hurt a deck like Move or a deck like Sarah's win rate. But I think it's the third most powerful thing you can be doing in the game right now, at least of the things we've talked about so far.
Yes, and what I personally really like about Serac compared to a lot of other decks is you have room both when playing and when building the deck. Like a lot of decks, once you figured out the best list, it's going to be set in stone for a very long time. I think every time I write the tier list, every time I do research, Serac has a different list. Serac has a different card. Serac has a different tech. Like this deck has not been stale since the start of the game, I feel.
The best thing that ever happened to it, or that happened to it since global launch anyway, is Hitmonkey. It opened so much up.
Yes, like Hitmonkey suddenly like told Sarah, you don't just have to react to people. You can slam a ton of points on them if you want now. And then Kitty joined, and then wow, that was a
Yeah.
party.
So we're fine with this at number three. Roy, any thoughts?
Everything you all said, this deck has strong Aristotle potential. So it makes people feel like they're Aristotle when they play it, and you know, that's always going to be powerful in card games. So very, very strong.
Okay. This
Okay, here
isn't
we
the
go.
right list. Den shared a list earlier. I went and just won a gold ticket. I won an infinite ticket with it. I played three gold games. Two of them were very, very easy. The third one, I went down 9-3 and then won. And so the basic difference in the list, I think, is the two drop spot is running. Help me, brain. What's in that two drop slot?
It's
It's a
Invisible Woman.
Invisible
What,
Woman.
like
And then
basically it rips off from the Serra deck that we just
and
saw.
Shadow King over Rogue. And
Yeah.
Shadow King kept winning, won me. The first round was a bounce matchup, and I four cubed them and then took them out in the second game because, like, what does bounce do to Shadow King and Invisible Woman? Just lose that lane, right?
Yeah.
Like that lane is lost. Me and then you just have to figure out how to steal another, and Killmonger does enough work to help you get there. Juggernaut does enough work to help you get there. Storm, if you can get that lane early, like if you storm Juggernaut a lane, right? Like that's a one lane that's over. Against bounce, they don't have any way to go above you at that point. Deck is really good. Like it's way better than I thought it was going to be. And I've been a long time Serra Surfer lover. It's one of my favorite decks in the game. I thought it wasn't going to be able to match the point slam, and I still think it's going to like generally lose to Lockjaw, pending seeing Goose and Storm and Juggernaut. But like, I'm willing to take something that has a really good matchup against 50% of the best decks like in the game, because it's good against everything else, at least decent.
Yeah, like I think Surfer is bad as long as you try to win on points. Like if you see this as a, I'm gonna beat you with potential, you're gonna lose a lot of decks. And then when you start understanding how sneaky Silver Surfer can be with the play patterns, the different like traps you can set to your opponent with the Storm Juggernaut, with the Polaris, with the Invisible Woman and that kind of things, suddenly you realize you don't need to drop like 30 points on every lane to win at Marvel Snap. Sometimes you can win with like 15 or 16 if you're able to derail your opponent's points. And I think Surfer is amongst the best one in the game at doing this. I mean, right now this is a list with Luke Cage, but I've won so many games against High Evolutionary, purposefully getting destroyed on lane by Cyclops, Nebula, Sunspot, and you just drop Shadow King, and like your opponent has absolutely no idea what just happened. And I think this is kind of the play style for Surfer right now. You have to accept to show how weak you are, so then you can blow them out when you like, actually pull the comeback.
Right.
I do think it's very hard right now for decks to beat Goose into Storm, Juggernaut, Surfer. Like, that's hard to beat. It's just a lot of lane control. It's a lot of awkward positioning, and like a lot of decks right now really want to be able to control their placement of their cards. Like they like it's particularly like bounce being so important. Like where you put cards is like really important, and to be able to limit that while also having something that goes maybe not as over the top as it did when Surfer was the best deck in the game, but the fact that it can sort of go over the top of a lot of things that when you force your opponent to play on your terms, like it's hard, like it's very, very hard to complain about this deck right now. I do think its ceiling is not as high as some of the other decks, but I think when you draw the cards right, this thing is live and kicking.
I think I have it somewhere around the evolved lane lockdown. I can see it being better or worse. I don't think it's as good as the pure high evolutionary deck into the meta right now.
Yeah, I think I would agree. Like, I think it's a great deck, but it's a little notch behind like the really good ones, except if you're like extremely good at the deck. But if we're talking about like average of the deck, I think it's in that second part of the meta. So in the bottom five, like in the, I guess, 5 to 7 range.
Yeah. As of right now, the top, let's do a quick catch up before we get to the last deck. So Bounce is 1, Evolved Lockjaw is 2, Sarah Miracle Control is 3, Pure Lockdown is 4. Sorry, Pure Evolution, that should be, excuse me, I mistyped. Then Sarah Surfer is 5. Then the Lane Lockdown is 6, because I think this is better than the Lane Lockdown. Patriot is 7, Shuri Skull is 8, and Move is 9. But obviously that will be 9 and 10 by the end. Does that sound right as to what we've discussed?
Seems right. Good.
Last deck, Rocks and Stats. This is the Howling Minds version that runs Kitty. He also said on ladder, you should not run Enchantress, you should run Shuri. I think that that's just right. I don't think Enchantress has enough good targets in the meta right now to be really worth playing in general. Do you? You like Enchantress right now?
Yeah, I do.
Oh,
no, okay. I do agree. Like, I think it's...
I like Rogue better than Enchantress right now, to be perfectly honest. Outside of Sandman, everything else I'd rather just steal. And I guess Electro, but who cares, right? I'm not playing either against Electro.
I think I agree. Like, if I had to play something special, like, I would probably go with Rogue rather than Enchantress.
So, I think this is probably the 4th best deck in the game, and I know that's a hot take. I think a version of this, if not this exact one, is as good as anything else. Like, I think it's got a really solid matchup into Lockjaw, because, largely because of Shang-Chi and putting rocks in their decks, right, will sometimes just win the match. I think it's got a okay matchup into Bounce, because Bounce wants to see its cards, and having a bunch of rocks to play makes it really, really sad. And once in a while, you get that lucky Black Bolt on Kitty type play. You get a Black Bolt is often hitting something good toward the end of the game in those matchups. And like Polaris moving around, like just a bunch of little things, right? Like Polaris moving Angela that they think they're gonna get a bunch of value from, Shang-Chi hitting something, Shuri dropping a 14 power thing that they're not really ready for, 12 power thing, whatever. Like, there's just enough little advantages that I think that this is, I don't think it's as good as Sarah, because Sarah has Invisible Woman and Killmonger, and I don't actually, could this run Invisible Woman and Killmonger? Why can't this run Invisible Woman and Killmonger?
Because we have to remove 2 cards, and we don't know what those 2 cards would be.
You get rid of Miles, right?
Kitty and Miles. Kitty and Miles.
Yeah, but then if you cut Miles, why do you keep Polaris in the deck?
Okay, so but like now we're cooking, right? Like,
we might.
Like, so the purpose of this deck, or like the way this deck has often been explained, I don't think this was actually up. So it drives me crazy, and I'm going to yell this at the top of my lungs until someone hears me, but Safety made the first version of this deck. No one was playing anything like this. Safety made it. And like 18,000 other people get credit, but like I pulled this off whatever tracker and was like killing with it, and I was like, who made this deck? And Safety was able to be like, here's my tweet from the day Stature went down before anyone mentioned anything. It's like, yeah, well, okay, it's your deck then. But like, Safety didn't build it this way, but a lot of this is just like a Sarah that's really good at mid-range games, right? Like, when I hit Infinite with it, I put Ghost in that Kitty Pride flex spot, because being able to like always lose priority for Shang-Chi and Enchantress was so strong. it plays like a control deck that can get tempo. I don't see why we can't keep doing the control things and just say, yeah, Korriga's a loss when we want to play Killmonger, but like that's still powerful enough.
So this is where I'm gonna be the party pooper. I do think this deck is really good. Like, and fun story is while I was waiting for us to start so I wouldn't fall asleep, I actually played an Infinity run and I cleared it with one card difference to this deck. Sure, it was Stegron. And I beat Bounce, I beat Lockjaw, I beat all that on the way. Like, so I think the deck is good. I just personally, and this is very personal, but today is about opinion, not data, so I'm going to be completely biased. I just think if this is mentioned as a top five deck in the game, I think good cards wave is wherever you put this one plus one.
So the good cards wave that exists right now, I beat with this once I know what it is. The good card.
Well, I'm not saying good card wave would beat this one-on-one, although I think wave shuts down a lot of it and removes kind of the black bolt pattern on turn five. But I just think both decks operate very similarly. Except Wave does it more often because it manages to play Chavez and it doesn't rely on the move package to get points. It just gets points. I might be completely wrong and I might be completely biased because I had a lot of success with the idea I had recently. But to me, Wave is still above like stature.
Well, before you go to sleep, you got to send me this deck. I'm not even waiting until tomorrow. But, I mean, I can see that and we can revisit. We can even like, so I also think the Thanos move deck is probably a top three-ish deck in the game. I beat Lockjaw and I beat Giddy with it fairly easily, right? Like I think that that's also going to be up there. So maybe there's just these two, like what do you call them in the tier list? Silent performers. I'm going to add a silent performers tab to our list, and our silent performers are going to be Thanos move and good cards wave. Does that sound like a reasonable compromise?
That, I mean, I will include it. Like, I mean, it'll be out by the time people listen to this podcast. But the good cards wave is in the conquest tier.
Oh, nice. Well, that's not out yet, right?
This one is as well.
But yeah, but the conquest tier list isn't out yet, right? Like that comes out. Yeah, it comes out tomorrow. It comes out yesterday as of people hearing this, because I wrote a top five things to know for Conquest Infinity that goes live the same day as yours. So I know when yours goes live.
Ooh, all right. Lots of behind the scene Marvel snaps out here. All right,
wait. So where do we rank this? We got to rank it.
I would rank it. So it's not on Bounce and Lockjaw level.
I don't think it's better than Mirror.
I would put it either what's
Pure Evolution and Sarah Surfer.
I think I'm okay to put it above or behind Evolution depending on preferences.
Above.
Personally I would put it above because I prefer this one better than Pure, and that's just our opinion. But if someone makes the switch, I can't fold that.
Agreed.
All right. I'm gonna read off for our loyal listeners our top 10.
Oh, it doesn't show here.
Pure opinion, no numbers, no ads, no nothing. Just pure, unadulterated, qualitative analysis. Our top 10 decks are Bounce in number one, followed by Evolved Lockjaw, followed by Sarah Miracle Control, Rocks and Stats at number four, Pure Evolution at number five. Number six is Sarah Surfer. Seven is Evolved Lane Lockdown. Eight, Happy 4th of July, Americans. Patriot. And nine is Shuri Red Skull. And 10 is Move. All right, that brings us to our top 10 deck list, which does not show because of the way in which Google Slides works and when you make changes on our, so for our visual our video audience, but I did just read it off for you all, both our loyal listeners and loyal viewers. So you can definitely, of course, also check out the show notes, which will be linked in the YouTube description or in the episode description itself to see this list for your own, alongside screenshots of each and every deck list. And that brings us to the wind down time of this episode. All right, Den, let our loyal listeners know once again where they can find you, what kind of content you produce, and how to reach out to you if they want to engage with you.
So most of my content is on Marvel Snap Zone, or more like small chunks on Twitter. Like I try to share one deck a day on Twitter. Most of the time they come from me. So at times I just share what other people are doing and trying to credit them for their artwork. The best way to get in touch with me is just reach out on Twitter, Discord, or comment one of the Marvel Snap Zone articles. And what you can expect most of the time, I call it light competitive content. Like, I like competition, but I don't like to take it seriously. Like, I like competition, but I also like to think it stays a game. So I like to perform in a funny way, if I might say it that way. So I try to be educational. I try to be focused on performance, but also try to keep that idea. This, we're playing a game. If you're not having fun, stop trying to be the best. Bring the fun back, and you'll see you'll be much better also true that way. So.
Awesome.
Den is for the people. So he's not only, like, he's going to be too modest to say this, but one of the most accomplished players to play this game in terms of competitive success throughout multiple games, throughout, like, decades? Let's not get too specific here.
I'm not at one.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
I'll be at next year. I'll cross one decade in card games alone.
So, okay. So, a decade of excellence, a decade of stellar play. Amazing content. What always impresses me about Den's content is a lot of the Marvel Snap Zone audience, and I'm not trying to speak out of turn, not everyone, but a lot of this Marvel Snap Zone audience is fairly casual players that are getting a lot of their information from the site, right? And it's really hard to serve that audience. It's something I'm learning to do right now, to serve that audience at the same time you're serving the audience of this podcast largely, right? Like the hardcore of the hardcore, the diehards. And Den, through honestly, like, ballet, manages to serve both perfectly. Like, both groups, the casual player gets a far, far deeper understanding of the game than they could hope to get from almost anywhere else, and the advanced player, you just heard this episode, right? Like, how high level is the conversation we have about these cards and these decisions with this man? He's brilliant. Make sure you're following him. Read his articles. You'll be better at the game and smarter for it. And you're supporting someone who really helps to support the community and its players.
Well, those were two great pitches for why you should definitely check out Den. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, read his articles on a regular basis at Marvel Snap Zone. And that means that we are here in the final moments of the episode, where we're talking about our variants of the week to celebrate Nick Fury's buff nerf. We are going to say what our favorite Nick Fury variants are. Den, what is your favorite of these three that are up here, and why?
It is the bear. Simple, because the bear is my favorite animal, to be honest. Like, when Glazer asked me to pick a Nick Fury variant, the only one I had in mind was the basic one and the signed one, which are basically the same with a signature. Mm-hmm. And then he just told me, like, just look them up and send me one. And I go to Marvel Snap Zone, I open them, and I just see this one, and my brain just goes like, oh my god, it's a Bear Fury! And I just didn't think more. Like, I don't even think I looked at all of them. I just saw this one, I was like, alright, I found it. And I just send him immediately.
So, the name on this card is actually Nick Fury. If you, like, look, it's yes. The best. Alright, I like the noir one. I'm a really big noir fan. I really like noir art. It's the only thing I generally like more than Den Hips. I think it looks super cool, and it really gets across the, like, Nick Fury is supposed to be a spy master, right? And this one feels like it. But the rain coming down, like the rain on Wolverine animated looks incredible. I would imagine it looks just as incredible here. I really, really want this variant. I have no idea how to get it or where it came from. It says season pass, but as far as I know, this wasn't the season pass when Nick Fury was the season pass. So I don't know where this came from, but I want it.
It could be getting Noir season pass.
An upcoming. Or it could be one?
It could be in the season. In the we're gonna get a Marvel's season. Oh, pass that'd be cool. As well in November, right? And Nick Fury is gonna be in that movie. So
in November.
Yeah. So far. It is so far. All right. Nick Fury, Dan Hipp. I mean, there's no argument for why Dan Hipp is great. I think this is one of his better ones. I like the Sam Jackson signature one because I just think it's really funny that it's just a digital card with Sam Jackson's signature on it. It's just the kind of thing that tickles me. But, like, I have this Dan Hipp. If I ever play Nick Fury, it's definitely the one I would do because, like, you just got to play your Dan Hipp variants when you have them. Make sure, folks, that you... watch Secret Invasion on Disney Plus if you like Nick Fury. It's the second episode will have already been up by the time you get to listen to this. So make sure you are keeping up on the MCU. If you like Nick Fury, bear or not, he is in the Secret Invasion show, which I enjoyed. All right. That brings us to the very end of our episode. Before we go, I just want to make sure I remind you all where you can find us on social media. We are at SnapJudgeCast on Twitter, on TikTok. We are at SnapJudgeCast. We are on the Marvel Snap Zone Discord, which you should make sure you join. The link is in the show notes and the YouTube description. We are really, really excited to be part of Marvel Snap Zone. Email us at snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com or on Mastodon at snapjudgments with an E at tabletop.vip. And most importantly, we are at snapjudgmentspod on YouTube. All right, Dan, thank you so much for staying up late and recording this with us. We really appreciate that with you. Happy Bastille Day, which is coming around the corner for you all in France. Have a wonderful evening.
I had a great
friend.
Time. Like, I was getting sleepy before we started, and honestly, like, didn't feel asleep once during the 2 hours we talked. So,
awesome.
Thanks, Casey.
You're amazing.
Well, you were a great guest. Awesome. And Aaron, happy, happy, happy 4th of July, which I know is a holiday that has a great deal of meaning to you here in the United States. And happy end of Pride Month. So lots of fun things going on here in the U.S. these last 2 weeks. All right, friends, stay safe, make good choices, and keep on snapping.